ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Introducing your host from New York, here is Sam Roberts.
Welcome to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Hopefully welcome back. If not, then welcome for the very first time. What a great show. First of all, real quick, it is a great time to be a wrestling podcaster. I tweeted out something like this yesterday, but I mean, thank you to Colt Cabana. Thank you to CM Punk. Thank you to the WWE Network. Thank you to Stone Cold Steve Austin. Thank you to Vince McMahon. What all those people did over the last 7 days for wrestling podcasters everywhere can't be understated. They've, in 1 week, increased the interest in wrestling podcasts like crazy. I mean, there are thousands of people who never knew wrestling podcasts exist. And because of those people and groups, it's now a real thing. When you look at iTunes and you see, and the same goes for Jim Ross and Chris Jericho, when you see the iTunes top 10 of sports podcasts are dominated by pro wrestling. I mean, you go there on any given day and you're going to see Jim Ross and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Chris Jericho. You look this week, because of CM Punk being on Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling show, you go to the iTunes overall, the top podcasts in the world on iTunes, and a wrestling podcast is number 2 behind Serial, of all things. Everybody listens to Serial. And the second podcast in the world is a wrestling podcast. It's good for everybody, and it's good for pro wrestling and sports entertainment in general. I'm going to get into CM Punk. I'm going to get into wrestling podcasts. I'm going to get into Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin during today's State of Wrestling. I mean, there's so much to talk about. Hopefully, we'll have enough time. But first, my guest on the podcast this week, you know him from TNA Impact Wrestling. He's been on the Independence for quite some time, Robbie E. Now, I did this interview with Robbie E. right before TNA announced that they had signed the TV deal with Discovery. So, as of the time this interview was recorded, Robbie E. was still in the dark as far as what he was going to be doing next year for TNA TV. Of course, they do have TV, which I think is a good thing for wrestling in general, and especially for TNA most of all. But let's get first things first. We'll get to the State of Wrestling about CM Punk and Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin and Ryback and WWE and the Doctor. We'll get to all that. But first, here on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast is Robbie E.
And now, the Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast interview.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, with me, that was very confident, like, just starting with me.
The sounds that I make.
With me in studio, Robbie E. Where'd you learn how to make confident sounds?
Even before confident sounds, I mean, let's talk about my new confident haircut
that
I got cut just for this show, because I'm pretty sure the listeners at home could feel that my hair looks different.
Well, they care.
Yeah.
And your haircut, I wonder this too, because, like, of course, Robbie E., you know him from TNA and all over the East Coast indie scene. But, like, the Robbie E. gimmick was kind of a Jersey Shore takeoff thing.
Yeah.
And it started when the Jersey Shore was super in style. But now your job, I would imagine, is to figure out how to take what was hot then and keep adapting it so it's still, like, topical.
Well, sadly, is trashy and terrible as everyone thinks the Jersey Shore is,
yeah,
that was my life when I was a 21 and 22 and 23, and now 31-year-old, it still kind of is my life. So if you do catch me at any of those clubs or bars in the summer, it still is kind of me. So
you're not just living the gimmick.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to take that out of me when regularly I'm going out girl hunting, getting bombed, having to get away from cops, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Kind of the life of Robbie E. anyway, uh-huh. So I just kind of brought that into pro wrestling.
So is that what happened? Like, you're like, wait, these guys on TV are doing what I'm doing anyway. If I could just kind of relate myself to them, which I'm doing anyway,
I might as well show the world who the real guy is and make some money off it.
What were you doing before that?
I was actually a school teacher, bro.
Yeah?
Believe it or not, I taught high school students phys ed and health. So I taught the future of America about sex.
Oh, because the phys ed teacher has to teach sexual.
Doesn't have to teach health, but I was certified in both. So I was teaching seniors in high school before they went to college, you know, how to go into the world and, you know,
as sexual beings.
Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Yeah, but all
of
this...
course, my hair wasn't up like this, though.
It wasn't.
No, it was a lot more, you know, down, nice, parted.
And were you wrestling at the same time as you were teaching?
I was wrestling at the same time on the minor leagues, the independents. I was for 10 years prior to starting in TNA. I actually was wrestling for when I was 16, and then I started with TNA when I was 26, so about 10 years before I started wrestling full-time.
So what, when you were 16, who were you?
When I was 16, I was Rob Echoes, and I became that because my name is Rob, and a kid in my woodshop class when I was a junior in high school had an Echo shirt, the name brand, and I had like a day to think of a name, and I was just like, oh, Echo, Echoes, Rob Echoes, this will last for a few shows.
Right.
And then it lasted 10 years and got shortened into Robbie E.
Oh, that's what the E stands
that's
for.
That's what the E stands for.
That's good, but Robbie E is a totally different guy than Robbie Echoes.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, Rob Echoes went through some drama. He was a pop star at one point. He was a valedictorian. You know, I went through some figuring out who I am, but yeah, Robbie E is the real me.
So when did you get to stop teaching?
About a few months after I started with TNA, I finished out that school year.
Yeah.
And that was it. I resigned and full-time wrestle.
So at any point, were you on TV and teaching?
Yes. I would teach. Okay, I would wrestle live on Impact on Thursday nights,
mm-hmm.
and then fly back home Friday morning, have someone cover my first class. So all my students would watch me fist pump Thursday nights.
Wow.
And then I would be teaching Friday. And I mean, like, the principal, the athletic director, everyone was fist pumping in the hallway. Like,
they were all excited about it.
Full on behind it. Oh, I brought the X Division title in. I mean, of course, you know, little souvenir for the kids. They all checked it out.
you had the X Division title in the classroom?
Yeah, of course.
That's great.
Who does it? Don't most teachers bring their championship titles? With them into
the
classroom?
I would think so.
That wasn't distracting for the students or anything.
No, and the principal was just like, no, it's pretty cool though, right?
But I mean, what actually is cool about it is the fact that you say you want to be a wrestler, and most kids have crazy dreams, and they don't follow through with them. So I still go back once or twice. I visit.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool that they actually get to say, hey, wow, this guy actually said he wanted to be a wrestler, and he did. Now, you know, maybe I could be what I want to be. So it is a cool role model thing, too.
Yeah, definitely. How were you as a student in high school?
Very average. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I just went through the motions.
You know? That's what happens. Like, me and my buddies, we just goofed around the entire time.
Yeah.
But then, like, a couple of my buddies are teachers now.
It's weird,
and
right?
It is a weird thing because you start realizing, like, if you realized what your teachers were doing when you were a student.
Oh, they want to get out quicker. They're waiting for the bell ring quicker than you are.
Right.
You know, they don't want to give you homework because it's more work for them. I mean, yeah, it's wild.
So how do the boys, as I say, how do other wrestlers – I guess now most of them know you because you've been doing this for 10 years or
whatever. Yeah.
But when you first...
Well, I've actually been doing it 14 years. Yeah.
14 years.
Because I've been independents for 10 and then TNA
right.
for 4. Yep.
Yeah.
I just turned 31 2 days ago.
And you got 14 years under your belt.
14
That's
years.
Huge.
My first pro wrestling match was on my 17th birthday.
Wow.
So 2 days ago was 14 years exactly.
How do you even get in the headspace? Because like when I was 17, I wanted to be a wrestler, but I was even scrawnier than I am now.
Well, I was. I mean, I was 140 pounds. I joined with three of my best friends.
Uh-huh.
Two of them dropped out before the first match, and one I wrestled my first match, who ended up beating me, Chad Warwick, with a DDT, and he never wrestled again. So I drove him out of professional wrestling.
One match. So what did you guys just go, okay, you're all wrestling fans.
We're all wrestling fans, and there was local independent shows like right by our house.
Uh-huh.
And then that independent organization opened up a school, and it was like 25 minutes away. So we had to get our parents' signatures. We were 16. None of us drove yet. So our parents would carpool driving us there until we got our license at 17. It was like 2 or 3 days a week, the training. And that's it. We all agreed and did it. But when they all dropped out, you would have thought I would have too, but I stuck with it. And
yeah. And it's interesting too that you actually went to wrestling school. Because I'm 31, too. When we were in high school, everybody was backyard wrestling.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to wrestling school. Like,
well,
everybody
don't get me wrong. I did my fair share of that, too.
You did.
I mean, who didn't? Couch wrestling, trampoline wrestling. I did it all. I mean, you had to prepare, you know?
Yeah, I was like, you know what? I'm going to start a backyard wrestling league. And I had shows booked. I was going through the school being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to bring him in to do this and him. And my parents were like, you're not doing that. I was like, why?
Okay, well, wait a minute. Let's hold on a second.
Yeah.
Let's compare here. What was your Backyard Wrestling Federation name? Because let's see whose was cooler.
I was going to go with Sam's Wrestling Federation.
So you're already taking charge.
Yeah.
You were going to be the champ.
Right.
See, I want to differ. And I tried to, you know, make it. We were STW, Severe Trampoline Wrestling.
Oh, that's dope.
Boom. And then, of course, every Saturday was Severe Saturday, our television show.
That's great.
Which two different random people bought off of our website online. And
two people.
And they actually wrote us an email commending us that we would run the imaginary ropes, and they liked how we would stop short and hit the fake ropes and then come back on the trampoline. So, I mean, we had a good thing going.
So were you selling tapes?
Well, of course we were. So, you know, why wouldn't we sell
tapes?
Right.
And then, because I was a tape trader, so I was figuring that I would start this backyard wrestling league and be like exclusively on my tape site. But then my parents were like, no, one person breaks their neck and we're the ones getting sued. So that's not going to happen.
I actually look back and I am surprised with the ladders and the weapons that were involved that no one got hurt. And I definitely don't recommend that for anyone.
No.
Don't backyard wrestle. It's dangerous. But I look back and I can't believe we did some of the stuff we did.
Well, it's funny because even like not only in backyard wrestling, and I think it's hilarious that you guys ran fake ropes.
Yeah.
like you hit the ropes.
I mean, it just seemed right.
Yeah. But like it's crazy to think not only I don't think people backyard wrestle that much anymore because everybody knows how dangerous it is now.
Yeah, it's
because like you
out.
Didn't even know how dangerous the stuff WWE was doing back then.
Well, here's the thing. Back then, there wasn't as many wrestling schools. Now, there's a wrestling school pretty much in every other town. It seems mm-hmm. like every Joe Schmo is opening up a school, which is terrible. And that is why there doesn't have to be backyard wrestling anymore, because anyone could just find a local school and join. Yeah. And, you know,
and a lot of the schools are on the level of backyard wrestling leagues.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of the schools are ran by, you know, the janitor at this building who has no wrestling experience, or by Chad Warwick, who wrestled one match and beat me and now thinks he could run a wrestling school.
I have a victory over Robbie E. You know, from TNA.
Yep. It's like, yeah, but
and
it didn't
that's
happen.
What they'll sell. And then now they got a wrestling school. So and that's what it's turned into.
How now do you know when you found a good wrestling school? Because I know a few of them. Like, I know, like, Pat Buck has a really good wrestling school. And
yeah.
Kurt Hawkins put one together. But other than that, how do you find a good, like, how do you know if you're, because there are a lot of people, I'm sure, listening and watching this, wanting to do what you did.
Yeah.
How would they know when they found a decent wrestling school?
I think it's just like credentials, you know, knowing that your trainer's actually done something and has some experience, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's it, you know, like a Pat Buck or Kurt Hawkins, guys who have been wrestling super, super long.
Yeah.
They obviously, you know, they know what they're doing. They know what they're talking about. If you go to a school and the guy says he's been wrestling 2 years or he's never done anything on TV or he's never, you know.
Or he doesn't look like a wrestler.
Yeah,
like he's just
I mean,
out
you
of
just
kind
of got to figure it out on your own, I would assume. But, you know, just look at their credentials.
Yeah, like the guy from Beyond the Mat just telling people not to eat fast food.
Yeah.
I mean. So. But that's the other thing that, I mean, back then you didn't know how dangerous concussions were.
Yeah.
You didn't know what caused them. Like now, do you miss that wrestling is different now than it was when you were a kid? In the sense that, like, those bumps that you were mimicking when you were doing backyard wrestling don't really happen anymore.
No, I mean, I think that was a cool time, but you can't risk injury for certain things. So certain things do have to be cut out. But also, I think wrestling's like anything else. It's like a roller coaster and goes up and down. So I think now it's just in a different phase for a few years. And I think in a few years, I'm sure it'll get wild and crazy again somehow. You know, it's always changing.
So when you walked into TNA as Robbie E and you had your hair all gelled up and you were, you know, the Jersey Shore type character, what was the reaction to you when you got there? And you're young, and you're young. You said, what, 26 when
I
you started with
26, yeah.
So, like, people don't realize that you've been at it 10 years. Yeah. They think you're just some 26-year-old.
My reaction as far as, from guys in the locker room?
Yeah.
Honestly, I mean, when I was there for wrestling for almost 10 years at the time, I known half to three-quarters of the locker room already.
Right.
So it was pretty comfortable right from the get-go. I knew most of the guys.
So they knew going in, they were like, yeah, we've been waiting for him to get called up.
Yeah, he's just not some random guy off the street. He actually, you know, knows what he's doing. It's incredible.
And did you, now, do you still, it seems like TNA trusts you as kind of their guy. Because, like, I went to the New York shows, and when they had, like, Muta and, like, Liger, and when they're bringing people from Japan.
Yeah.
You know, you can't beat them, unfortunately, but when they have to put guys like that in the ring with somebody they can trust.
I could beat them, man. I have a chance.
But they have, like, is that kind of your role
now? I always say when I started 4 years ago, we had different locker rooms. In the locker room I was in, there was, say, about maybe 15 to 20 guys, and about 95% of that locker room is all cleared out now. None of those guys are still here. And when you would have looked at it, I wouldn't have been the ones that you would have thought would have still been here. And I think the reason that I am is just because I'm a team player. I'm reliable. I think they're confident that I know what I'm doing and whatever I'm asked to do, I could get the job done. You know, and there's never any problems with
me. And you show up on time.
I show up on time for the most part. And, you know, I think, they look at me as someone that there's never going to be any issues with Robbie E.
Are you happy with the difference in the locker room right now? Like you said,
I think our locker room is the best that it's ever been.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have a different, you know, mix of talent, all guys from all different places, different styles. Everyone's positive. Everyone's, you know, it's like a family. Everybody works together. We all want TNA to get as big as, you know, there's no egos or anything. Everyone's approachable.
Yeah, I found that about TNA because I've interviewed a bunch of guys from TNA, and everybody that comes in is not so much focused because what you read on the internet is kind of doom and gloom for TNA.
Yeah.
But it's been that way for years. Like every time anything happens.
I mean,
happens.
Since TNA started, everyone has doubted it and doubted Dixie Carter. But I mean, Dixie Carter loves her company, loves all of us. She's never going to let it go anywhere. Nothing's going to happen to it. We all are confident that TNA is going to be around for the long time.
And why is it? It seems like everybody specifically at TNA is focused. Like each individual performer is just like, you know what? I don't really worry about the other stuff. We're going to be fine. I have confidence in that. I'm just going to go out and put on the best match possible.
Yeah.
Is that unique to TNA? Is it unique to the talent that's brought in? Is that looked for? What do you think?
What, for us to always go out and perform at our best?
And just have that attitude going in. Like, I'm not really worried about the bullshit that's happening.
I mean, because I have confidence, you know what? You know, it's pro wrestling. So until something happens, it doesn't happen. You know what I mean? So sure, we could sit here and say, oh, what if this and what if that? Or we could just say, hey, our company is still, you know, the number one show on Spike TV. It's still going in a great direction. We still have fans craving great wrestling. Let's work our hardest. You know what I mean?
So it's not like, so you're not going to sleep worried about whether or not you're going to have TV next year. You're more, I have tonight, I'm on TV. Let me just go out and do the best match possible because there's going to be a million eyes on me.
That, and I'm confident, you know, in the president of our company, Dixie Carter, that she, you know, is not going to let TNA go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Is there a thing in TNA, and I haven't gotten this opinion necessarily, but is the goal for someone like you, do you look at TNA as a home, or do you look at it as like, I'd really like to see what's going on in WWE at some point?
I mean, for right now, everything in TNA, I look at it as a home. I love where I'm at. I think I still have a lot to do there. I'm a former X Division champ, TV champ, two-time tag champ. I want to be one of the few Grand Slam champions to get the world title, so I could say I've held every title. So there's a lot more I still want to do in TNA. And I mean, without TNA, I wouldn't have landed which I'm currently on CBS right now, The Amazing Race.
Yeah.
So for the fact that I'm on that right now, which is one of the biggest things I've ever done in my life, you know, TNA got me that. So, you know, I'm grateful to them for everything they've done for me, you know?
How has The Amazing Race been?
I mean, it's insane. Tonight, actually, Friday night, every Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS, it airs, and it's an hour, and it's crazy, and I raced around the world, and I did things with animals that I never thought I would do in my life, and I hate animals, and yeah, it was the wildest thing, and it's honestly indescribable. You got to just watch it to see how crazy it gets. You see a different side of me.
Are you happy with how it came out on TV?
For sure. I mean, one episode has aired so far, and
yeah.
I think it was great. I think people are going to fall in a – I think people are going to watch hashtag the wrestlers, which was what me and Brooke, Knockout Brooke, are called, and I think they're going to fall in love with us, and you know, people are definitely going to want to see more of us and tune into Impact to check us out.
Did The Amazing Race come to TNA and say, we want two people? Did TNA say, hey, we got these two wrestlers
that
want to be on the show?
That we it was actually through me and Brooke that we got it. It's just you know, they liked that we were pro wrestlers with you know, already on TV and stuff, so we needed TNA for it. But me and Brooke actually talked, our agent helped talked and worked it out for us.
Did you go to Brooke and say, hey, we should do this show?
It was kind of both of us at the same time.
Yeah,
we figured it out. Yeah, and they, you know, we had, you know, an interview with the important higher ups and everything with CBS, and they just fell in love with us right away. They saw me and Brooke, they saw we were wacky and crazy and, you know, good looking pro wrestling couple, and they just said, this is perfect.
And as far as the rest of the locker room goes with that, are they jealous, or are they, hey, these guys are putting our TNA on CBS?
Yeah, everyone, that's, I think, good, thinks it's great. I mean, the opening credits of the show on CBS, they show us in a TNA ring and everything. And yeah. I think, you know, I don't think anyone's jealous. I think they're all excited to watch us make a fool of ourselves.
Yeah. Like, all right, they'll do the idiot stuff and they'll promo the whole show. So what difference does it make?
Yeah.
What did you think of TNA bringing back the six-sided ring?
Well, so I never really had, when I started with TNA, it was already at four sides.
Yeah.
But a few X Division pay-per-views, we had it, so I wrestled in it a few times. I mean, for me, my honest opinion, I could go either way. It is what it is. I could adapt to anything. Like I said, I'm easy. I'm a team player. But when I do think of pro wrestling, originally the first thing I think of is four sides. So you do have to get used to it. But again, I am used to it now, and it's cool. You know, I appreciate that it's different, and anything different, whether people like it or not, it gets people talking, and that's a good thing.
And that's kind of one of those things that, like, you need the when you flash on to know it's a TNA ring, like you said.
Exactly.
If you're going to be in the credits of The Amazing Race, if you see a square ring, the most people who don't watch wrestling just go, oh, what are they, WWE, yeah. WWF yep. wrestler guys?
Yep.
And it's like, okay, no, this is something different. This is like a weird...
Hey, you guys do that fake fighting stuff?
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but now we're on a fake reality show. What's more real life, do you think, pro wrestling or reality TV?
Well, the reason that The Amazing Race and Big Brother and Survivor are three of the biggest, longest-lasting reality shows is because they are all completely real. I'm not saying I've never been on other reality shows to experience what they're like, but I've been told that there's a lot of things that are fixed and whatever. Yeah. But I mean,
assisted reality is what they call it.
I tell you from personal experience, 24/7, The Amazing Race is—it's a race. It's 100% real.
And I guess that's another way, you know, because The Amazing Race, obviously, they have tons of footage that they're combing through to turn it into an hour show.
Yeah.
When you got shows that are like they film for a month and then they have a season of TV, those are the ones that's like there's no way that's real.
Yeah.
Because you haven't filmed enough to catch real moments.
I mean, if for 1 hour TV, 11 teams, 22 people that are crazy running around the world. I mean, yeah, so many things I was like ready to watch and I'm like, oh, I guess that got cut out or this. I mean, it's just hard to get everything in, but yeah.
So who'd you grow up watching or idolizing?
There wasn't one specific person that like.
Were you a
I
big
loved.
Wrestling fan growing up?
Yeah, obviously. I was when I was little, and then when I got to middle school, I was too cool for it. And then when I got to high school, is when it was time to start STW.
Well, when did you discover girls?
Girls, as far as like when I
hooking
lost
up
my
with
V, hooking up. I kissed my first girl in sixth grade.
Okay, because that's the thing. Because like most people are like, I watched wrestling until I discovered girls. And I was like, well, that would explain why I didn't get laid in high school and watched wrestling throughout.
But I did when I started to love wrestling again in high school. I still got laid. Also, I was still cool and popular and stuff.
But
I wasn't like a wrestling geek
because you learned how to get laid before in middle school. Like you learned how to be cool. Then you're like, all right, I can start watching wrestling again.
But I will say it's really weird. Like in normal life for me, when I'm dressed regular or whatever, if you look at me, you wouldn't look and be like, well, that dude's like a pro wrestling fan or a pro wrestler. It's weird. Like I never, I don't know. It's really weird. And I always, even though I love wrestling so much, I was never like, hey, brother, or like I don't use wrestling terms or like I'm not like super, super wrestler.
Right.
But yet I love it. It's really weird.
Hey, babe, we should go out tonight, but kayfabe it, okay? Yeah. Like, what? Oh, no. Because that is true. Like the minute you start, like there's
why was that waiter healing us out, man?
Yeah. He was what? Oh, no. I said there's like those words.
Yeah.
That like it's the one moment where a girl would just off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not interested anymore because you said healing out or whatever.
Yep.
You didn't have to learn that the hard way, though. You kind of got that from the get.
Yeah. It's not, it's just, I'm not, I don't know. I find everyone talks the brother talk and it's just not me. I don't know.
That's what you should do, dude. You should start seminars.
Yeah.
For helping wrestling fans get girls, right?
Honestly, now with some of the fans that I've seen, I don't think it's even possible.
It's too much work for
random.
You.
Yeah.
Do you want
every fan at a show is like a Chad Warwick? I mean, they're all just it's not.
So Chad Warwick was not getting.
Chad Warwick was the opposite of me. He was my friend, but he was the geeky wrestling guy in high school that definitely didn't get laid or get laid by the girls that I was.
So you could only talk with Chad about wrestling like in private. If he came up to you in the hallway,
no, I would still talk to him about it in the hallway, but I would just like still make him look like a dork about it, or just like make it like he's telling me about it, like I care, and then like you know, tell me later.
Just email it to me.
Chad Warwick is actually still one of my best friends. I'm still very close.
Well, that's what I figured. Like, you wouldn't be just dropping his name and trashing him if you weren't still his friend. So then, did you start getting involved in wrestling groupies, or for women, do you go totally separate?
I would say both. I mean, for a girl that I want to be with long term and everything, I always said that I would never want to date anyone in pro wrestling, and then of course I ended up dating someone in pro wrestling. But the girl that I was dating in pro wrestling isn't really a pro wrestler. Even though she's a pro wrestler, she got into it through modeling. So she didn't like grow up saying brother and you know, all that stuff. She didn't know much about wrestling. So that's why I was able to stand it. But, for moving forward, with girls that I want to be with, it would be, definitely someone outside of wrestling.
Is that just because you need to escape it?
Like, you need to not have it happening when you're at home?
Yeah, I definitely want a girl. You know, it would be nice for a girl to tell me that she never heard of Hulk Hogan or Jeff Hardy or Kurt Angle. Like, yeah, just completely, like, yeah.
Who is Kurt Angle? Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like, that would be, you know, like, I don't even want them to hear of it or know what it is. Yeah, just so it's different.
Wrestling fans get upset about that sometimes, though. Like, they want you to live pro wrestling, you know what I mean?
Well, because they live pro wrestling.
Exactly.
And they don't get laid, so.
So that's the secret. Yeah. Like, just enjoy, like, segregate your life a little bit.
Exactly. And shower, because most pro wrestling fans don't shower.
But they're watching wrestling. So then, do you still watch when you're not performing? Do you go home and watch? Are you that guy, or...
Yeah, I mean, I watch my stuff. I watch Impact. I watch Impact, and that's about it.
Yeah. Do you watch it now when you watch your stuff? Because some people don't watch their stuff because they're, you know, self-conscious about it.
Yeah.
Do you watch it to be like, I'm the fucking man? Or do you watch it to, like, figure out what you're doing wrong? Or...
Both. Yeah. You know, I'll watch what I'm the wrong, but it's also like, hey, did you see my match last week? Check this out. Bro. That's me on TV, dude. You know,
like, you have parties for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way. And it's probably such a more healthy way to just be blindly, like, optimistic like that. Like, yeah, did you guys notice I'm the man? It's better than just sitting there being like, oh, I suck.
Yeah.
Have you been confident forever?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much. It's the only way to be positive and confident. What happens in life happens, man. You know what I mean?
Nah, not worried about it.
Not worried about it. And the thing with watching other wrestling and everything on TV, I actually don't really, because of time and just because, you know, my day's home, I'm running to the gym and doing errands and trying to get everything in before I leave again. I really don't watch much TV in general. I don't watch sports anymore. I get to watch anything. It's like Impact and romantic comedies. That's like all.
You're a rom-com guy?
Rom-com guy to the fullest.
What's your favorite rom-com?
You know, I'm into Paul Rudd. You know, I mean, whatever good stuff, you know. It's a good laugh, a good love story. You get it all in and
you love
one,
that's,
you know,
so
kill
funny.
Two birds with one stone.
So you're, but you're not a horror movie guy.
I am. But there's no good horror movies lately, is there?
I guess. I like the Conjuring.
I saw that, but I don't even remember. A lot of them I get, like, if it's weird to understand, like, sci-fi horror-ish.
You don't like
or, like,
that.
It's too much, dude. Like,
you like
yeah.
simple.
Simple.
Because you're going to the movies.
Less is more, bro.
You're turning your brain off.
Yeah. I can't focus on all this.
You're like,
stuff.
Oh, I hope Paul Rudd gets the girl.
Remember,
oh,
I remember, I went through the motions in high school, and it's weird that I was a teacher. So there's no way I could focus on a movie. I mean.
So do you have, like, are you an idiot savant at something? Like, is there something that you focus all your energy on? Or is it just more like, no. Like, whatever. You just kind of. Do your shit and not worry about much.
I live in, like, Robbie E. world. So, like, everything, yeah, like, I
whatever you're
know,
doing at that moment is, like,
yeah,
this is
that's
what we're
pretty
doing.
Much it. Like, all the time people will say to me, like, oh, my God, did you see that huge earthquake happening and whatever on the news and all over the newspapers? And I'm just like, no. Like, I don't know anything going on except, like, in my little world and in my little Robbie E. bubble. Like, I would know if there's, like, a new machine at the gym.
Yeah.
I would know if on my way to the gym there's a new store built that I pass. Like, I do my little circle when I'm home and,
right.
like, that's it. And, like, I don't know. I don't even know. You know, a lot of guys at TNA used to tease me, like, they'll ask me questions, like, I got confused with, like, who – I don't know who's on, like, a $5 bill or, like, who is, like, the first president. I thought the first president was Abe Lincoln. Like, dude, they're all the same. Like,
doesn't matter
what's
to you.
It matter? Like, how does what's going on right now in Africa or this thing from history that Christopher Columbus – how does this affect my life in any way?
Right. So,
it
like,
doesn't.
Are you worried at all that there's Ebola breaking out in the United States?
See, I have no clue what that is. I have no clue what that is.
You don't know what Ebola is, so
not
why would
clue.
You be worried about it?
Exactly. Exactly. And why know about things that are just gonna, you know, worry me or slow down my gym routine?
Yeah,
it's pointless.
Bro, I was lifting, bro. I don't know.
You know, like,
I don't know.
It don't make sense.
You know who the vice president is?
I have no clue who the vice president is. I know that the president is Obama, but I have no
All
clue
right.
who the vice president is.
You know, but you don't care.
I don't know who ran against him. I don't know who the people ask me, like, am I a what is it, Republican or Democrat?
Right.
I don't even know what they are or care.
Right.
I don't vote.
You don't good.
Because
so that's like you're saying, I've made the choice to be completely uninformed. It doesn't cost you anything. I'm not voting.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. People will say, like, yeah, but you should still vote. And it's like, why? I don't know who the right dude is. So what if I pick the wrong guy? I don't
right,
know what I'm
right.
doing. I'd rather just not be involved.
Besides, I'm lifting that day anyway.
Exactly.
So
I got to wait online shit going and that little on. Weird curtain thing and vote. That's annoying.
Yeah, you're sitting there trying to figure out
the
how
old women.
Yeah, you're like, I'm 31 years old. If I'm asking somebody how the lever works in the booth, I'm going to look stupid. I'm not doing that.
Oh, my
that.
God, I'm 31 now. God, I'm like almost 50, bro.
Is that tough for you?
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like I'm 15.
Because now you're that, like...
Now I'm not, like, just turned fresh 30, which is still on the edge of the 20s.
Right.
Like, dude, I'm 31.
I turned 31 a month ago.
It's, like...
And it's, like, no, you're in your 30s
now.
Yeah,
this is...
What are we doing?
I don't know. So are you going to settle down?
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Get married and have a kid?
I do want a family at some point, for sure.
You're 31. Yeah. At what point?
I mean, I don't know. Well, I mean, bro, 40's the new 30, you know? We're doing it later.
Right. I watched that Paul Rudd movie, This Is 40. He was cool.
Great movie.
It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Jeez. Wow. I mean, but does it scare you at all to be getting older? And
like, no, I just try not to think about that stuff in Robbie E world.
Good.
So that stuff doesn't come into my bubble.
And that's what I love, that, like, so you don't, because when I'm in a conversation, I see people having a conversation, right? And they're, like, very informed of what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, I should probably be more informed so I can have those conversations.
Yes.
Does that occur to you ever?
No, not at all.
No,
not at all. I completely know what you're talking about, but I just, you know, if someone's in a conversation or anything and they're talking about things I don't know, I'll just be like, hey, did you see my match on Spike last Wednesday night? Like, I'll bring something different to talk about.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Why talk about other people when you can talk about yourself?
Right. Well, especially when you're Robbie E, right?
Exactly.
That's so great. So do you wake up feeling good?
I wake up feeling great.
Then you must.
Yeah, I do.
You figured it all out. And, like, you have that moment where you're like, oh, I'm 31, I can't believe it. And you're like, oh, but I'm going out tonight, so that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, dude, people, like, all the time will say to me, like, you know, they know me as the guy that's always smiling or, like, nothing bothers you. Or, like, why is this, you know, girlfriends I've had when we're fighting, why are you not mad about this or getting, you know, whatever. I rarely will raise my voice or get, like, whatever. It's just like, meh.
You don't care. Like,
yeah, like, you know, like, unless it's, even if it is something drastic, it's already happened. I can't really do much about it.
So if a girl says she doesn't want to see you anymore, you're like, all right, so we won't see each other.
A girl would never say she didn't want to see
you. It's never happened, so you don't know. All right. It's never happened. Well, Robbie E., I'm glad we took some time to get to know each other today.
I think we got to know each other real well.
Yeah, I think you got to come back. I kind of want to have you on my SiriusXM, on the Friday show to just ask, like,
about the girls that, you know,
well, girls and
in high school.
I also want to ask you, like,
middle school
trivia questions about what's going on in the world and just watch you not know
it'll
any
be
of
them. You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah,
they used to line up to take turns asking me questions.
I love that you're like, yeah, you can ask me anything, I won't know the answers
for the most part. Yeah, I mean, and if I know it, I'll answer it, but right. I probably won't.
And like, and also at the end of it, I'm not going to feel bad about it because
nope.
I don't care.
Yep.
So great. It's the way we all should be. Well,
figured it out.
You can watch Robbie E. But see, like, how would I be like if I was like, so what, you're on, like, wrestling, bro? Like, what's that? You're on Impact, though. I do know that on Spike TV on Wednesday nights now, right?
Wednesday nights on Spike, and then Friday nights, The Amazing Race on CBS.
That's great. And you got a podcast now.
Me and EC3, my arch nemesis / best friend, have started our own podcast, the Robbie EC3 Experience, and currently we are fighting over who is the head co-host and who is the co-host.
That makes sense.
So you definitely want to tune into that. Yes,
yeah, I
sure.
want to know.
Now, you know, we're talking about some pretty important stuff on that.
Is EC3 a little more up on what's going on in the world?
Yes, he's actually complete opposite of me, and he thinks I'm total scum, and I think he's total scum, and that's why our podcast is so great, and, you know, we're best friends / arch nemesis.
Sounds entertaining. Well, Robbie E., thanks so much for being here, man.
Thank you.
And where
bro.
Can they follow you on Twitter, too?
Twitter and Instagram at Robbie E. Impact and Robbie-E.com, my website, and, of course, ImpactWrestling.com. You could get information on everything going on with TNA.
Excellent, man. I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, bro.
Here is Sam Roberts.
For the record, Robbie E., I hope it was made clear that there are ways. I maintain a non-virgin lifestyle and watch pro wrestling, and I think it is possible. If you can be a wrestler and get laid, you can watch wrestling and get laid. I think it's possible. There's no reason that any dream, no matter how big it is, should be squashed. Big thanks to Robbie E. for doing the podcast this week. I find him endlessly entertaining. I'm definitely going to talk to him again. As I was kind of reprocessing some of the things we talked about in that interview, I think the most terrifying thing is if you take the beginning, what we learned at the beginning about Robbie E. and what we learned at the end about Robbie E. and put them together. Okay, so what are we fresh? What's fresh in our head that we've learned? He knows nothing about what's going on in the world outside of his lifestyle, and he's proud of it. He knows when there's a new gym machine, but he didn't know anything about Ebola. Okay, he knows if there's a new gas station in his neighborhood, but he doesn't know who the vice president is. I don't even want to tell him, because what's the use? He doesn't care. He doesn't know and doesn't care who the vice president is. I love that.
The first thing that we learned about him in the very beginning of the interview, he was a teacher. I know, a gym teacher, but still, an educator. Somebody who worked in a school. He was shaping the minds and bodies of the future of America. There are teachers going through our educational system that don't know or care who the vice president of the United States is. Robbie E. has exposed us. And number one, I thank Robbie E. for that. Number two, I think that's a terrifying statement about the educators of America. I hope the teachers union gets very, very upset about that interview. All right. Speaking of getting upset about that interview, I hope there's nothing that Robbie E. said in there that CM Punk gets upset about. Let's talk about that right now in the state of wrestling.
It's now time for this week's State of Wrestling.
I don't even know where to begin with this week's State of Wrestling. I was joking before, of course. Colt Cabana had CM Punk on his podcast, as if I'm informing anybody that this is news, as if you didn't know this. Or if you listen to Sam Roberts' wrestling podcast and you did not know that CM Punk did Colt Cabana's podcast, I appreciate your loyalty more than you know, because you can't get this show without going on the internet. And if you go on the internet in any way, shape, or form in a search for any content that is pro wrestling or sports entertainment related, and the CM Punk Colt Cabana interview somehow slipped by your radar, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your loyalty. But for those that do exist, yes, CM Punk did Colt Cabana's podcast. And one of the things that he said at the end of the interview kind of made me feel bad was that when he went off on Chris Jericho a little bit. I don't want to say he went off on Chris Jericho, but he had mentioned that Chris Jericho was quoted as saying that CM Punk doesn't talk to him anymore, that he's reached out to CM Punk and CM Punk doesn't talk to him or many other people. And Punk made a comment that the people that he and I'm of course paraphrasing what CM Punk said, but he what he basically got across was that he still speaks to people that he considers friends, but there are some people who he felt were reaching out to him more for their own personal gain, possibly, than to be checking on his well-being, and he decided to avoid contact with those people. Obviously, implication being Chris Jericho was one of them. Chris Jericho said that on this podcast. I'm assuming, and I believe, that he might have said it elsewhere. I'm not taking full credit for it. But immediately, I had that scary feeling in my gut when when Punk called out Chris Jericho for that. Because I was like, how are we 5 episodes in and already a heat-seeking podcast? I'm trying to be positive. The whole point of this podcast was because I actually like wrestling. Okay? I actually enjoy sports entertainment still in my life. I don't need people getting upset about it just yet. Just yet. But I think Chris Jericho said that in other places. And you know what? It was the truth. So I'm being half serious. I'm not actually. I don't even know where to begin with the podcasts that happened this week. Usually I talk about what's going on in WWE or TNA or Ring of Honor or whatever. I mean, Ring of Honor's got a huge pay-per-view this weekend. You know, we were talking to Robbie E. I'm looking forward to TNA coming back to television on relaunching, I should say, on television on Destination America. Raw was okay. Wasn't great. I think New Day is interesting. They haven't done anything to really grab me yet, but I at least like that they're doing something with those guys. I'm a little happier with what's going on with Eric Rowan. I said before I was worried that he was just going to be kind of a goofy, lovable giant. I'm a little happier with that in the sense that they seem to be giving him a nice big babyface push. And I'm super happy with the fact that at the end of Raw, I didn't love the 6-man tag. It was okay. It was fine, but it was kind of uneventful. But I did like that at the end of the night, you looked in the ring and there was a strong grouping of babyfaces. You have 4 guys in the ring that are now being built to be legitimate top draws on the babyface side, and you've got a group of heels that are top draws on the heel side, and they're different and they're varied, and it's a good thing. So that was a good thing. Of course, the most exciting thing, I don't know if I said, I love the Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose segment, both the every segment that the two were involved in, the whole the R-Truth match, into the promo, into the attack, the whole thing was amazing. I love what those guys are doing. Of course, the big Noel Foley debut on Raw as Saint Mix Elf was fabulous. And to me, and I thought this went unnoticed by a lot of people, I thought, and maybe it's just because I'm weird, but I thought Jimmy Uso slapping the taste out of Miz's mouth for giving his wife his business card because he wanted to hook her up with somebody in the entertainment industry or whatever, I thought that was the best thing that either Uso has ever done. I love The Miz, not because I don't like The Miz, but just because it was, to me, that moment was the most realistic moment on the entire show. I thought that was great. I believed Jimmy Uso when he came out and he felt like he was from the streets. Not that I'm from the streets and would ever know, but it seemed like that way. And that Jimmy Uso had caught somebody messing with his woman and was protecting her honor. It felt real, felt cool, and I really enjoyed that. Now, I want to talk about CM Punk on The Art of Wrestling, and I want to talk about Vince McMahon on Stone Cold Steve Austin's podcast on the WWE Network. I thought both podcasts were incredible. I'll talk a little bit. I'm not going to get all my feelings about CM Punk out just yet because Colt Cabana is going to stay on the iTunes top 10 list. He's got CM Punk on the podcast this week, too. They're doing a question and answer thing, I guess. So I want to listen to that, too, and then we'll really start to dissect the CM Punk thing. I've spoken to Punk, not privately. I wouldn't say we have a friendship. We have a very solid work relationship, I think. CM Punk has been nothing but awesome to me over the past few years. Talking to him in various, interview spots and radio spots that we did. And every time I've interacted with Punk on the air and off the air, he's been nothing but an awesome dude. I love that guy. And I was happy. Here's what I was happy about on his podcast. I was happy that he was able to get things off his chest that he had on his chest. And I thought what he did most effectively was portray himself as a human being. He was not a pro wrestler. He was not a sports entertainer. He was not a superstar. He was not an athlete. He was just a dude. He was a person who was having a rough go of it at work and had made his money and was fed up with where he was at, so he left. I think there will come a time where he regrets saying some of the stuff he did. Punk strikes me as a very kind of in the moment and maybe emotional type of guy. I think he was wearing his heart on his sleeve a little bit in that podcast. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I probably wouldn't be that emotional. You're not going to catch me, but it's just a different way of processing. But I'll tell you this. CM Punk's interview on The Art of Wrestling was by far the most truthful interview I think you'll probably ever get on a wrestling podcast and gave you more insight into the day-to-day life of a WWE superstar than most. I mean, the things that bother him, the things that they go through. I don't think we realize. We hear about the wear and tear, and we look at these guys and the sacrifices they make in the ring. But when CM Punk was breaking down the injuries that he had, what caused them, how he felt, I mean, detailing everything, it really was insightful as to what these guys have to go through day in and day out, and they're exhausted. And exhaustion does toxic things to a person, okay? I don't have to travel every day. I don't have to do anything physical. But I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning every morning for radio. And 4 o'clock in the morning is the time that's the 2014 time. That's the latest I've ever gotten up. I spent years getting up in the 3 o'clock hour, 3:15, 3:30, 3:45. Just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. And I'm telling you, going a week with very little sleep just destroys you as a human being. So you couple that with physical injury and having to do something physical it's a rough, rough lifestyle. And I think that came across very well on Punk's podcast. I thought he went a little harsh on Ryback. I guess if somebody had physically injured me, or as Punk said, if I felt somebody had taken years off my life, then yeah, I guess I'd be mad at them too. So I understand that. But I thought he was – I didn't think it was probably necessary to drag Ryback down with him. And he was not kind to the doctor that the WWE has on staff. But it was really interesting to hear that podcast juxtaposed with the Steve Austin, Vince McMahon podcast. I thought the Steve Austin, Vince McMahon podcast, which, I mean, I haven't even listened to as a podcast yet. I just watched it as a WWE Network special. It was amazing. And I'll tell you why it was amazing. It was amazing because I thought Stone Cold Steve Austin was pulling no punches at all. He mentioned TNA a couple of times. Colt Cabana and the Art of Wrestling podcast got a mention by name. CM Punk came up. Macho Man Randy Savage came up. Shane McMahon came up. Stone Cold Steve Austin did his job. He went after the things that fans have wondered about for years, and he brought them up. And to Vince McMahon's credit, there was some ducking and weaving here and there, and Vince McMahon is a professional at doing these interviews. But I found Vince McMahon to be candid and refreshingly honest. I thought it was something that I would imagine WWE superstars will listen to and watch so that they can get a better insight into what their boss is thinking. I don't think any WWE superstar, aside from maybe, you know, your John Cena, Randy Orton, Chris Jericho, I don't think anyone else on that roster has the ability to catch the insight that we as the audience caught listening and watching the Steve Austin or the Stone Cold podcast that was on the network this week. I thought, of course, the Macho Man thing was very – I mean, I'm a Macho Man Randy Savage fan from day one. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I thought it was obvious. I feel like it's obvious that he's going into the Hall of Fame very soon. They just put out another DVD. They've got an action figure deal with him or his family, his estate. He's in the video games. He's, you know, he's kind of back in the merchandising fold, which means a Hall of Fame trip is inevitable. I loved that silence that Steve Austin left when he approached the Macho Man question. I did wish that he had asked what took so long. That was the follow-up question. That was the one follow-up question I would have loved. And maybe Austin didn't want to open that bag of worms. I don't think we'll ever know. But I would have loved just to see what the response would have been if he had said, well, why didn't the Macho Man Randy Savage go in before? Why was Coco Beware put into the Hall of Fame before Macho Man Randy Savage? You know, I mean, there's a list of names. He could have gone in years and years and years ago. And the question is, why now? Why not before? That's the one question I would have liked. Maybe he'll tackle that. You know, I think he said he's going to try to get more time with Vince to do this again for Podcast One. Hopefully that question will be answered. But the stuff that I like, number one, Stone Cold Steve Austin bringing up Cesaro was maybe the best moment of the podcast because it gave you a real – there's two moments that I really liked that I thought gave you a real insight to what Vince McMahon and his creative mind is thinking, whether you agree or disagree. When Vince McMahon went into Cesaro – and the fact that he was incredibly gifted physically and he had all these technical skills, but Vince McMahon thought he was missing an it factor, he was missing charisma, and that he didn't know what the missing piece of the puzzle was. I thought that was incredibly interesting because I don't think most people in Vince McMahon's position would go ahead and give their true, honest opinion on an employee in such a public forum, especially somebody like Cesaro, who the internet – you know, has been talking about for years now. And I think I felt like that was his honest response, that he likes the guy, he thinks he's gifted, but he doesn't know what to do with him. Now, do I agree with Vince McMahon? No. I think Cesaro is incredibly charismatic. And, you know, for whatever reason, the brakes get put on him. But I think Cesaro is kind of ready now to start getting pushed in the direction towards main event. Is he ready to be thrusted into the main event? No. But is he ready to be making an impact? Can he be this year's? Or, you know, I think 2015 can be for Cesaro what 2014 was for Roman Reigns. I don't see any reason why that's not possible. But it's not up to me, is it? I'm not the genius that created what we know as WWE. I also really enjoyed the debate between the terms pro wrestling and sports entertainment. And you could see the frustration on Vince McMahon's face when Stone Cold Steve Austin kept slipping back into using the term pro wrestling, and how insistent Vince McMahon was on the fact that what he was doing was not wrestling. He, at one point, he goes, "Come on, Steve. You know it's not what that's not what you did." And Steve said, "It is what I did. I was in the ring. I was wrestling." And Vince said, "Yeah, but when you were in the hospital," well, he didn't say this, but he implied, "When you were in the hospital hitting me over the head with a bedpan, that wasn't wrestling. That was entertainment." Vince McMahon is keyed in. I'm putting on a product that is sports entertainment. It is obvious that he does not like the term pro wrestling, wrestling. He does not feel like it describes what he does. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I mean, it's a weird thing because I get what he's saying, but then what is pro wrestling? You know, is it if what Vince McMahon is not doing, if what Vince McMahon is doing is not pro wrestling, I don't know necessarily what pro wrestling is then. I kind of look at pro wrestling and sports entertainment as interchangeable. I don't think pro wrestling is a sport. I don't think pro wrestling is this thing. I don't think it exists in the form that it might have existed years ago. And I think pro wrestling is sports entertainment. You know, I think that's what it is. They've molded together, I feel like. But I thought it was really interesting how keyed in on that term sports entertainment Vince McMahon is. And it's a little weird. Like, you would think that in his position, he wouldn't let sort of these nuances affect him whatsoever. But you know what? The guy is a genius when it comes to branding. When it the Vince McMahon, he's a genius at a lot of things. I mean, Vince McMahon is to sports entertainment what Steve Jobs is to computing. You know, in my opinion, I think he's an absolute genius creatively, financially, and branding wise. So maybe he's onto something. Maybe he's right. Maybe he knows. Because sports entertainment wasn't a thing before he started talking about it. So, and he's been pushing this thing. He's been very successful at it. The takeaway from it, too, and I loved the Undertaker-Brock Lesnar discussion that they had. And it was kind of reminded me of the conversation that CM Punk had with Colt Cabana about The Undertaker and CM Punk. But I've agreed with the decision to make Brock Lesnar the person to beat the streak. I agreed with it. I would like to, I mean, when it happened, I agreed with it in the sense that, okay, this could go somewhere. And I think Vince McMahon is right on the money about that one. I think that it has been the right decision in the sense that I think that it's elevated Brock Lesnar immensely. Keep in mind, before Brock Lesnar beat the streak, he had lost to several. He had lost to John Cena. He had lost to Triple H. He was losing matches. And somebody like Brock Lesnar can be used better than that. You know, eventually, you can, you're always going to win your tune-up match. But if you're consistently losing main event matches, then it's like, okay, like it's fun to watch, but we know Brock Lesnar's not going to win because he's not going to be there on Monday, as CM Punk mentioned a few times on Colt Cabana's podcast. But when we get a shock like we got at WrestleMania, when Brock Lesnar ends the streak, you know he's not going to be there on Monday, and he still ended the streak, it almost feels like he's taken the company hostage. Like, in that moment, and since that moment, Brock Lesnar has felt unstoppable. And he felt that way again at SummerSlam. When he beat John Cena, he's felt that way this entire, since WrestleMania, Brock Lesnar has felt unstoppable. You know, and now you're in a position where there is nobody on the roster that you know is going to beat Brock Lesnar. When Brock Lesnar gets in the ring, you can no longer say, "Oh yeah, no, I know he's not going to win. It doesn't make sense for him to win. I know he's not going to, because he beat The Undertaker, and that didn't make sense in our heads, did it? No." But I think it's made the title more important. I think it's made the WWE Championship more important, because number because you can't get it off the guy. It's not just people trying to beat Brock Lesnar to prove that they're the best. It's people trying to beat Brock Lesnar because they want to be the WWE Championship. And again, the fact that he's off TV with the title gives you that same feeling of Brock Lesnar beating the streak and then leaving TV. It's like he's got the title hostage. It's like he's holding the company hostage because he knows that nobody can beat him. And so why does he have to defend anything? I think it works. For me, it very much works. And the shows that he hasn't been on have not been bad shows. So I don't think it's been costing the company anything. As far as Vince McMahon's other comment on the Stone Cold podcast about millennials, he said Stone Cold asked him in the beginning of the podcast about what the difference in the locker room was between now and when Steve Austin was on top of the roster. Meaning, he said he felt like there was not that same sort of hunger and competition and people trying to get their spots, and he didn't know, is that because there's less sports entertainment competition? Is it because you don't have a Monday Nitro to go head-to-head with? Is it what is it? What is it? And Vince McMahon said that he felt that the current locker room is simply less ambitious than the previous locker rooms have been. I mean, he said there's a lot of factors, but he said millennials in general are just a less ambitious, more afraid to fail group of people. I think that there is a fraction of truth in that. I think whenever you get into a position where you're kind of casting out a generation of people, that maybe you need to start assessing where you are in your life. You know what I mean? Because to say millennials in general are less ambitious, you're getting very close to the, you know, I used to walk up both ways. I have to walk up the hill in the snow to school, 6 miles each way. Back in my day, it wasn't so easy. You become that guy real quick, and that's not where Vince McMahon wants to be. I mean, I think he's there is a thing with millennials where they, in my interaction with them, in my field of work in broadcasting, I don't think that a lot of the interns that have come through have been as ambitious as even in my generation they were 10 years ago. I think 10 years ago, there was more ambition and competition and sort of hunger to succeed than there is now. I think from what I see, you know, kids coming out of college and stuff now do feel a little more entitled than they used to me. That's my feeling on the matter. But there are definitely exceptions to the rule. And, I mean, it's something you just have to accept. I think a bigger issue is in the entire system of development. Now, I was down at the developmental center and the training center, and it's beautiful. The facility that they have in Orlando is incredible, and they really have. And by the way, that facility has pumped out amazing stars already. You know, you look at Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and all these guys, Luke Harper and Eric Rowan and everybody that's coming. I think Bo Dallas is fantastic. You know, you look at all these guys that have come out of there, and it really is a great system, and it prepares younger guys for what the next step is. But, and I talked to Triple H about this, and the interview's on YouTube if you haven't seen it. Go look at that interview, and Triple H makes it a point to say that the people in that development center, the training center, are getting opportunities that he never got, that nobody ever got, that this generation of guys are getting more opportunities than they've ever gotten before, and that really they should be thankful for it. Now, I think that's true. And he also said that his tolerance for complaining has decreased because of all the opportunities that these guys are getting. And that's true. But I think CM Punk hit on something and Stone Cold hit on something, and it was that, to me, the most successful guys in sports entertainment are guys that are self-made. And Vince McMahon himself was talking about the fact that people need to take a chance and grab the brass ring and shake things up and take a risk and get yourself over. Is what Steve Austin and Vince McMahon were saying. Get yourself over. And there's no doubt about it. A guy like CM Punk got himself over. Now, he didn't get to the place that he wanted to get and maybe was a little impatient, but probably shouldn't have had to fight as hard as he thought that he did. I don't know. That's a whole conversation to have, and we'll probably get into it next week. But the thing is that I think you need to have a chip on your shoulder to really be a standout star in the world of pro wrestling. You need sports entertainment. I'm sorry, Mr. McMahon. You need to be a guy who feels like he's better than everybody else and feels like he owes nothing to nobody. You know what I mean? I'm using a double negative to express my point there. I don't owe nothing to nobody. You need to have that sort of that edge that you know you're the best. And I don't think that edge is very easy to achieve. I don't think that you can sit there and know that you're the best when you're being reminded how good you have it every moment. You know, I think it's hard to develop because people who think they're the best, look at Stone Cold, look at Triple H, look at Shawn Michaels, look at all these guys that have clawed to get to where they are. Even CM Punk. These guys have had to fight every step of the way. They have these histories. They've gotten bad gimmicks. They've gotten the short end of the stick over and over again. They've had to get to the point where they're so fed up with everything that they're going to put it all on the line and just move forward with this thing. And F the world, I'm going to take over now because I have no other options. Now, if you don't have a chance to develop that sort of armor, that body armor, because of all the times you've been knocked down. If you haven't been knocked down and instead have been reminded how much better you have it than the generation before you, it makes it really tough for you to walk around like you're better. You know, I mean, I think that somebody to be bigger than The Rock, to be bigger than Stone Cold Steve Austin, to be bigger than any of these guys, you have to walk around thinking, I'm better than that guy. And when you're being reminded constantly, we didn't have a training center. We didn't have an NXT. We didn't have physicians. We didn't have branding experts. We didn't have all this stuff that you have. So you better count your lucky stars that you're being given, the opportunities that you're being given. Well, then how do you get that sort of hardened, grizzled thing that you need to have that chip on your shoulder? You need to have a bit of a chip on your shoulder. And I think that's really hard to do when you're being reminded of all the opportunities that you have. I think that's at play, too, in terms of what's going on with this current roster. But I also do think that there is something symptomatic about a lot of millennials. That said, I personally feel, and that was around, I'm just a squeak outside of the millennials, I think. And I feel like I could see that around me when I was graduating college, when I was entering broadcasting, when I was entering the entertainment world. I could see that around me, that there was a sort of sense of entitlement, and there was a sort of sense of, I want it all, and I want it right now. And people trying to take shortcuts and people trying to do whatever it was that they had to do to get the quick fix on things and not thinking about the long-term big picture thing. And I think for the exceptions to the rule, to the people that do want to achieve more than their predecessors, this is actually a good time to do it. Because this is a time when you can go out and achieve more than the people next to you because they're not willing to work as hard as you. If what Vince McMahon is saying, and there is less ambition in the locker room than there was 15 years ago, then the few guys that actually do have ambition should be able to achieve more than anyone can imagine because they should be able to be running laps around everybody else in that locker room who, let's be honest, are their competition. In terms of being the number one guy on the roster, everybody in that locker room is in competition. And if there are guys that are, like Vince McMahon said, not ambitious, then there is no reason for the ambitious people to fail or to fret or to ever think that they're going to do anything except succeed beyond their wildest dreams. And if they're not succeeding, maybe they're not as ambitious. But maybe they also have factors in coming up that are different. I mean, I don't know because I'm not there, and I don't think any of us know because none of us are there to see it. None of us know the wrestling business except for those of us that have been in the wrestling business. So there are those of you listening that have been in a wrestling ring or have promoted or have been writers or whatever it is, who have interacted with the people who make decisions, then yeah, you know. But I don't know. I've never worked for WWE. I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm telling you that after the Stone Cold podcast and after CM Punk's podcast with Colt Cabana, we're a lot closer to knowing than we were before. I feel like these two podcasts are like the beyond the mat of this generation. These two podcasts have opened the door. In the 80s, it was kind of the John Stossels and the 2020 reports and Vince McMahon announcing that this is sports entertainment and it is not necessarily the finishes are scripted and that it is sports entertainment, not pure sport. That was the 80s. In the 90s, is Beyond the Mat, greatest wrestling documentary ever made. And I think now in this generation, it's the podcast that Stone Cold Steve Austin did with Vince McMahon, and it's the podcast that Colt Cabana did with CM Punk, because those two shows, that's 3 hours of programming in the span of 1 week, lifted the curtain back more so than anything we've seen in years and years and years. So, I mean, I thought both were fantastic. Real quick, I try to keep this to an hour, so no prizes this week, but let me still read some Twitter feedback. At the Dunkel wants to know, could any of this Punk stuff be a work? I sincerely doubt it. I can't tell you how much I praise Steve Austin for bringing CM Punk up in the podcast that he did with Vince McMahon this week. I don't think this is a work. I don't think the Montreal Screwjob was a work. I think sometimes some stuff like this happens. Now, is it something that could be capitalized on later? Sure. But is it a work right now? No, absolutely not, I don't think. Right Way Photo on Twitter, at Not Sam, got done with listening to the Sting podcast. That was last week. Do you think Sting and Hogan will meet in the WWE? I mean, they might meet. They might shake hands. They might give each other a hug. I sincerely doubt that Sting and Hulk Hogan will wrestle a match in a WWE ring, and I hope they don't. I don't think that would serve any purpose. I don't want to see it. If Hogan gets back in the ring, I want to see him against John Cena. I don't think there's any other opponent. I mean, I would have loved to see him against Stone Cold Steve Austin years ago. I don't think a Stone Cold Steve Austin Hulk Hogan match does anything now. If Hogan can get back in the ring, John Cena is probably the only opponent today. If you ask me today, John Cena is the only guy I want him facing. As far as Sting goes, Undertaker, Triple H, Bray Wyatt, even Stone Cold Steve Austin, all tons of names come up before Hulk Hogan's name even crosses my mind. So hopefully that does not happen. And Good Guy Steve on Twitter writes, do you plan on doing any podcasts with commentating of past pay-per-views? I think he means like Mystery Science Theater 3000 over old pay-per-views and stuff like that. I don't have any specific plans to do that, but I would love to get together with somebody and do that. I think it'd be a blast. At some point, I'm sure we will as this podcast evolves, but not at the moment. Thank you for listening to this week's Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast and for making the podcast such a success. We've been on iTunes top sports for the whole week. So thanks a lot, everybody. See you next week when we talk. And I will get way more into the CM Punk podcast after the second one Colt does. But thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Follow at NotSam on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And subscribe for free to listen every week to Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.